Sunday, May 19th, the Columbia Broadcasting System presented an address by Colonel Charles A. Lindbergh, who discussed the air defense of America. In keeping with its policy of presenting both sides of public controversial questions, the Columbia Network has invited the Honorable James F. Burns, Democratic member of the United States Senate from South Carolina, to present his point of view. Senator Burns is chairman of the subcommittee of the Senate Appropriations Committee in charge of naval appropriations. His topic is an answer to Colonel Lindbergh. Senator Burns.
Perhaps the greatest clause in our Bill of Rights is that guaranteeing free speech. In the exercise of that freedom, which totalitarian government is fast wiping out in Europe today, Mr. Charles A. Lindbergh went on the air last Sunday night to urge the American people to continue to bury their heads in the sands and give no thought toward the shocking conflict now raging across the waters, which threatens the very fabric of Christian and democratic civilization. Mr. Lindbergh's speech was announced as a discussion of our air defense. Like many other Americans, I listened in keen anticipation of hearing a technical and practical discussion of our aviation problem by the man who thrilled all of us by his spectacular flight across the ocean. But instead of giving us advice on a subject about which he should be qualified to speak, Mr. Lindbergh gave another discourse on American foreign policy, about which he is no more qualified to speak than Wrong Way Corrigan or any other aviator who may fly the Atlantic Ocean. A few years ago, Mr. Lindbergh went to Great Britain to live. It seemed natural to us that his interest in aviation should cause him to inspect the air forces of other countries in Europe, France, Germany, and Russia. We thought nothing of it at first. Later, we were somewhat surprised by the news that he had accepted a decoration from Hitler. We were further surprised by the reports about the time of the Munich settlement that he was volunteering his advice in important circles in England and France thought to be favorable to a policy of appeasing Germany by offering no resistance to her aggression upon small countries to the east. He had always been regarded as a shy, retiring young man, and the reports of his intermeddling in Europe did not seem in keeping with his character. Since last September, he has taken it upon himself to speak thrice to the American people upon what their attitude should be toward the conflict now raging in Europe. When his first speech was delivered, the question of the arms embargo was uppermost in the minds of Americans. Mr. Lindbergh failed to state in so many words where he stood. But few who heard his speech could doubt that its net effect was to give great comfort to those opposing the shipment of planes, even under the cash and carry clause, to the Allies fighting in defense of their national existence. The following month, Mr. Lindbergh addressed the American public a second time. He pleaded that, for the benefit of Western civilization, we should continue our embargo on offensive weapons. He wanted us to forbid the sale for cash and delivery in this country of bombing planes to Britain and France while their people would lie unpitied beneath the bombs of German planes. In that speech, Mr. Lindbergh even went so far as to attack our neighbor Canada for joining in the defense of the Commonwealth of Nations of which she is by her free choice a member. He stated in effect that we must demand that Canada separate itself from the British Empire. The United States cannot start something it does not intend to finish. Had we followed his advice and made such a demand upon Canada, and had Canada refused to comply, we could enforce that demand only with force. In effect, he was pleading that we make war upon Canada. Last Sunday, the once shy and reticent Mr. Lindbergh again thought that the American people were in need of his advice, this time about what he professed to call the air defense of the United States. this third speech of Mr. Lindbergh was a singular performance. President Roosevelt had recommended appropriations for national defense, which were extremely conservative, in light of the recommendations of his military experts, and in light of the shocking and ominous developments abroad, which have threatened with destruction the most inoffensive neutral nations. Even Mr. Lindbergh, at the end of his hysterical protest against other people becoming hysterical about our defense program, admitted that we need a greater air force, a greater army, and a greater navy. And nowhere did he indicate in what respects the president's program is defective. Yet Mr. Lindbergh spoke as if the United States was being rushed into an air defense program before a definite policy of defense had been formulated. He pointed out that an air defense program based on the defense of the United States alone would be quite different from a defense program based on the defense of the entire Western Hemisphere. And he proceeded to argue what no responsible person has ever denied, that America cannot effectively defend herself without defending the whole Western Hemisphere. But the president has stated that policy of hemisphere defense time and again during the past 2 years. It is a definite policy of defense already formulated. Why, then, does Mr. Lindbergh try to create the impression that the American people are being rushed hastily and impulsively into a national defense program? Why does he scorn as hysteria this belated rising of the American giant from sleep? Mr. Lindbergh said, "If we desire peace, we need only stop asking for war." What official of the United States government is asking for war? Does he think the president is asking for war because the president asked the Congress to provide additional appropriations for the defense of the nation? The people of America know that a nation does not have to ask for war in order to have war visited upon them. Did China ask for war? Did Czechoslovakia, Poland, Denmark, Norway, Holland, and Belgium ask for war? No, not one of them did. Yet today these nations have been wiped out and their men, women, and children slaughtered. And Mr. Lindbergh says, "No one wishes to attack us." Is he authorized to speak for Hitler and Goering? Even if he is, can the American people, in the light of recent history, rely upon that assurance? Mr. Lindbergh says that while it is true that bombing planes can be built with sufficient range to cross the ocean in return, no such planes exist today in any air force. Would Mr. Lindbergh have us wait until they are built by a nation capable of producing thousands every month? You and I know it is no feat at all for planes now in existence in fleets to make the jumps the president described in his message from Iceland to Greenland to Canada to New England. When Mr. Lindbergh states that regardless of which side wins this war, there is no reason, aside from our actions, to prevent a continuation of peaceful relationships between America and the countries of Europe, I shudder to think of the kind of America Mr. Lindbergh is willing to accept. He seems not concerned with the flagrant violations of the rights of peaceful little nations, the cruel and bitter persecution of God-fearing men, women, and children because of their religion, race, or political opinions, the burning of books, the bombing of helpless women and children fleeing in terror from their homes, the parachute spies and the torch troops. To Mr. Lindbergh, all these seem to be only little trifling, insignificant incidents to an age-old struggle for power. Read his speeches. He has no word of criticism for the aggressor, no word of pity for the victim. The world should know that his voice is the voice of Lindbergh and not the voice of America. to me, the vile, barbaric deeds now being inflicted upon democratic peoples in Europe represent an attack against everything that we hold dear, an attack against international good faith, against religion, against learning, against political freedom, against civilization itself. Apart from all moral values, does Mr. Lindbergh really believe that our problem of national defense would not seriously be affected by the destruction of the British fleet or its surrender to Germany? Is there among us a thoughtful person who believes that should England be brought to her knees within the next few weeks or months, that Hitler would permit her to scuttle her fleet? Must we not realize that Hitler would issue a warning that should Britain destroy her fleet, he would destroy England itself? Could we expect the British government under such circumstances to sink its fleet or send it to help the United States? If Britain did what you would do under the same circumstances and surrendered its fleet to save its people, we would be confronted by Hitler possessing a navy superior in strength to our own and with more warships in the course of construction in England than in any other country. Even if we do not know the terms, we know there is an understanding between Germany and Japan. With the combined sea power of Japan and Germany, vastly superior to ours, could we rely upon the assurance of Mr. Lindbergh that war would not come to us unless we asked for it? England and France were lulled into a false sense of security by those who pleaded, as Mr. Lindbergh has pleaded, that they could continue to live in peace with nations which trample ruthlessly over the rights of other nations, and that those who dared to warn them of their dangers were actuated by personal profit and foreign interest. England and France were also told, as Mr. Lindbergh has told us, that appeasement was of primary importance and the production of airplanes, cannon, and battleships of secondary importance. England and France discovered too late that refusing to aid the victims of aggression and trying to appease the aggressor did not keep them out of war, but only served to bring the war flaming out of the heavens upon them. Fifth columns are already active in America, and those who consciously or unconsciously retard the efforts of this government to provide for the defense of the American people are the fifth column's most effective fellow travelers. Mr. Lindbergh may tell us to stop this hysterical chatter of calamity and invasion, but I thank God that America has at last been aroused to the dangers that beset her in a world menaced by brute force and strident ambition, and is now grimly determined to arm in self-defense. We have witnessed the effect of lack of unity in Britain and in France. By their experience, we should profit, forgetting all personal grievances and all political ambitions. The American people should unite under the leadership of their president and work to preserve our lives and our liberties.
The Honorable James F. Burns, Democratic member of the United States Senate from South Carolina, has spoken on the topic, An Answer to Colonel Lindbergh. He is chairman of the subcommittee of the Senate Appropriations Committee in charge of naval appropriations.